Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Andy. I needed to let you know that we are coming down to the wire on RebateJet.com. What's RebateJet? It's a platform I created for you guys, the small to medium-sized sellers trying to compete against those big brands with those big budgets. Go now to RebateJet.com, sign up for that free seller account before it goes away this month. Now, why do you want to be a part of RebateJet? Just a few things. You can list promo codes for free. You can offer 3 rebates free per day. You can list your products and sell them directly to our customers on our website. We even have a free liquidation marketplace for you to unload products that didn't work out. We also have something else crazy in the works. You guys are going to love it. Go now, RebateJet.com. Now onto the show.
Welcome to the Seller Roundtable e-commerce coaching and business strategies with Andy Arnott and Amy Wiese.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Andy Arnott with my cohort,
Amy Wiese.
And this is Seller Roundtable number 22, and we are excited to have Jeff Schick with us today. He's an Amazon seller and a Amazon legal ninja. Can I call you that, Jeff?
You can. Yeah, there's no issue with that. Just can't call me a legal expert, apparently. That's the buzzword I'm not allowed to use.
Okay, right. Do we have to preface this whole thing with this is not legal advice unless you pay me, right?
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. At least I didn't have to say it. It sounds much better coming from you guys.
All right. Perfect. Hey, thanks so much. Thanks so much for joining us today. And pretty excited to pick your brain on a lot of, I would say this is probably, if not the biggest, one of the biggest frustrations with Amazon sellers when it comes to, you know, anything legal with Amazon. In the past few years, it's gotten better. Trust me, because I started in 2013. And back then it was like, good luck getting any Amazon to do anything. It's getting better, but there's still a ton of frustration when it comes to dealing with Amazon. So before we get into the meat of things, can you tell us a little bit more about your background? Share as little or as much as you like. Where you're born, where you live now, past jobs, college, all that fun stuff, just to kind of get people up to speed on who you are and what you do.
Certainly. So, all right, cool. I guess I was born and raised in Atlanta, which is really rare if you ever know people from Atlanta, because there's so many transient people there. So I was born and raised there, lived there up until 2014 when I went off to law school up in Philadelphia. I went to college actually in Ithaca, New York, at Cornell. So that was my first stint in the frigid North. And then I decided I wanted to go back and be tortured a little more for law school. So went to law school in Philadelphia at Penn, and then after law school, graduated, moved down to West Palm Beach into Wellington, which is Horse Country, Florida. So that's where I currently live. That's where our law firm's based out of, is Florida, but we've actually got some lawyers all over. So Paul Rafelson is up in Connecticut, and then we've got a lawyer, Vern Franciscan, who's out in Seattle. So I hold down the fort in Florida. Past jobs, kind of been buried. I've always been involved in like Amazon since 2011 is when I started it. At the time I was working for the university as a research assistant. And then also my parents are veterinarians. So I worked with my mom on her veterinary hospital. So that's kind of how I got into the game. And I've been kind of in the animal health realm ever since, I guess, and legal as well. So Amazon, legal, and animal health have been kind of my three strong areas. So
cool. When you got me beat, I thought 2013 was old school, but you got me beat. So you remember then when you first started out, how, you know, back then if you got hijacked or, you know, had any issue where you had to contact seller support, it was literally like pulling your hair out because there was nothing you could do. I remember I always tell people this story whenever they're like, oh man, I'm so frustrated with Amazon. I was like, you have no idea. Once forlorn in 2014, we had just about our entire catalog hijacked for the entirety of Q4. And we lost net, you know, six figures from that, you know, like we lost a ton of money and there was literally nothing I could do. I remember getting up every day and emailing like everybody, like seller support, like every day. Like, you know, I had a few contacts back then, you know, emailing them every day and them just being like, oh, you have to do a test order. I'm like, they're in friggin' China. It'll take a month and a half. Like Q4 will be over. Like, it was just like the ultimate like frustration. And I know people still have that now, but it's nothing like it was back then. Did you have any horror stories like that when you first started on Amazon?
So I guess I was lucky. I was selling pet products, so it really wasn't too competitive yet. The Chinese didn't realize that Americans liked pets. They just ate them at the time. It was an easier time. My biggest issues were back in the day when I, like, you know, sellers, there were no courses. So it's all self-taught, trial and error. So when you would create, you know, a listing or do anything, you'd see how it went, you know, and you just kind of throw stuff at the wall and see if it sticks. So at one point they used to require, I don't know if when you started in 2013, they required packing slips. I think that was past the days of packing slips though, in 13, right? Or am I wrong about that?
I can't remember. I remember doing packing slips. Probably.
So this was right before box content was rolled out. You still had to do packing slips. And so I remember at one point I was trying to save money, and a product that I'd been sending in 12 packs, I started sending in 72 packs. And this just gives you a difference in how Amazon's changed over the years. So what I did is I started changing everything to these 72 packs, and it worked for about 2 months. And then all of a sudden I got a call from Seattle, and it was an Amazon representative in seller performance. They wanted to know if I was free, and I was walking. I think I was going to like take a final. So I was like, oh, this is fun. So I went to, I told him, no, I'm not free. He said, well, here's my number. Call me back when you are. So I made myself free about 30 minutes later, and called him back. He's like, okay, well, nothing super serious, but your account's temporarily suspended until we talk to you. Like, that's why I made myself available. He said it was going to be suspended until I talked to him. So I logged on. He goes, so your account's suspended. You know, go to this website. It was Amazon Seller Central. And he tells me to type in this like string of numbers and letters into the search bar. So I do that, and it pulls up the policy on what qualifies as a case pack. And he made me read it to him line by line. And at the end of it, he goes, do you understand what you did wrong? And of course I'm, you know, pretending, you know, no, I have no idea what I did wrong. He's like, well, this one product you've been sitting in is 12 packs, all of a sudden became 72 packs. And we think you're doing this to game the system. And I'm like, oh, I wonder why. You know, that's right when they launched multi fulfillment center routing. Before, it used to be you'd create an order and everything would go to one warehouse.
Yep.
And this was right when they were launching the whole splitting the orders. So that was partially why. So he basically was like, yeah, we don't think 72 is a valid case quantity based on the fact that you're the only seller sending in this product is a quantity of 72. So it's clearly not correct. So do you understand that you're not going to do this in the future? And I was like, yeah, I do. He's like, okay, I've reinstated your account. By that we understand. Make sure you read the rest of these policies so I don't have to call you again. So that was how suspensions used to be handled back in the day, or at least that's how my suspension experience was for Amazon, my 2-hour suspension.
That's better. Now, we got suspended in the beginning too. I think everybody who's ever sold on Amazon, if they don't have a suspension story, they're like, you're not doing it right now. within like the first 2 or 3 months, I can't remember the exact reason. I don't know if our business took off really quickly, so I don't know if they like thought there was something fishy going on there, or I think it might have been like shipping stuff on time. I honestly can't remember, but I think for us it lasted like a month, so that was pretty frustrating too.
Yeah, I've seen some sellers be suspended for a couple of weeks. You know, that's part of our practice area that we help sellers with is the suspensions, and it's certainly tough, especially. Kind of hard sometimes when you see the sellers that they've clearly done some stuff wrong, and you're like, how do you help them? Because on the one hand, you need to help the seller because they deserve a second chance, and on the other hand, you're like, gosh, but what are they doing to other sellers too? That's probably the hardest thing about my job now is the balancing the moral issue between, you know,
helping people. I was the same way. Was it like 4 years ago now? Probably. I don't know. But when people started doing the whole like discount for reviews, right? In the beginning didn't do that because I just felt like, you know, it was like dishonest. And I was like, I really don't want to play that game and all that kind of stuff. But within a year, I mean, my competitors were just starting to kick our butt. So it was like one of those things where we said, okay, you can't beat them, join them. And at that time, I actually spun up my own review service as well. That's a whole nother story. But I totally get what you're saying, where on one side you want to help sellers be successful, but on the other side, if they're doing, you know, some low down dirty stuff, because you were a seller in the past and you had to deal with sellers cheating, you know, that I could see how that could be a real challenge.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's certainly interesting, especially like I had a couple of weeks ago, we had our first conflict of interest ever arise. And that was a unique experience because, you know, being in the Amazon, there's 6 million sellers. And how do you ever foresee two of those 6 million having an issue and both reaching out to me and being people that I know and just not knowing them from their seller names? And so having to tell both of them that I couldn't help them, that was an interesting one too.
Was that because do you still sell on Amazon or was that another conflict of interest?
No. So I still sell on Amazon for a couple brands that want it, but this was unrelated to my sales. This was two sellers. One of them that was alleging that the other seller was hijacking, and the other seller alleging that the other seller filed a bogus IP infringement complaint. And then once they both submitted their info, me realizing that they're both, neither of them had signed an engagement letter. They both were reaching out at the exact same time for help and having to tell, and they both came from different groups that I'm a part of. So I met both of them and knew them and happened to tell both of them, hey, I can't do anything with either of you guys. Go find their own lawyers. You know, this is an interesting one to have happen.
That's crazy. Very interesting. What kind of programs are you seeing from Amazon? You know, do you think they're doing things right, or are they moving in the wrong direction or the right direction with things like the Amazon Zero program? You know, are you familiar with that? Have you dealt with people using that or you know, complaining about that? Any feedback on those brand registry? You know, Amazon Zero, all those types of programs that Amazon's starting to push a lot more.
Yeah, so Project Zero is quite interesting. I think it's going to help, but I think it's going to be abused a lot, mainly because it's up to the brands to be honest and say that they're removing someone who's actually selling counterfeit products and not just trying to remove somebody because they don't like them selling their product. So I think it's going to be a lot of issues going forward with brands trying to use Project Zero as the new, you know, way to avoid paying lawyers to remove unauthorized sellers. But instead, they're just going to try to remove them with false counterfeit complaints. So I think that the tool is necessary because there's so many counterfeit products on Amazon and so many counterfeit distributors on Amazon. But it's not respecting the rights of people for the first sale doctrine enough. So it'll be challenging. And that's the only major program that they're rolling out at this time to address that. They don't have any programs in the launch for dealing with the authorized and unauthorized seller problem either. Other programs that I think are more harmful to sellers, though, are actually like the manufacturer accelerator program, because that's, you know, Amazon's way of getting to make their own private label brands without people realizing that it's an Amazon brand.
So that leads me into I thought of a great question while you were talking about that. So as a private label seller, if somebody, you know, if you get a quote unquote hijacker on your listing, right? So say you're a private label seller, you don't wholesale, you're not selling your product to anybody else. You're not wholesaling it. Nobody's an authorized distributor, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, and all of a sudden you see somebody pop up on your listing with a Prime item. In the legal sense, I know that a lot of people are like buying and reselling, you know, whether that, you know, a lot of sellers will do like discounts, things like that. Legally, what can a private label seller do to protect against those types of hijackers, if anything?
So it depends on if the hijacker is selling counterfeit goods or lawfully acquired goods. So that's one of the major issues with some of the launch services, is that you'll give away all these products for a deep discount. Someone will buy them at, say, 90% off or 60% off, and they know that you're going to raise the price in the future. So they'll hold on to it for a couple months and then sell it once the product's got more velocity and rank. And because those were lawfully acquired goods, even though they were acquired with a coupon, they're still legitimate items. And so if you report them as selling counterfeit goods, now you're creating a problem because you're making a false counterfeit complaint, and they have more rights in that situation than you as the brand owner. Now, if you have a trademark, you've got, you know, your policies in place that create material differences between law, you know, products that are being sold by you versus products sold by others, then you have more of a leg to stand on to go after them. But it really should be done on the off Amazon context, not through brand registry, because brand registry or trademark infringement reporting is not necessarily supposed to be used for reporting someone selling materially different products. It's really supposed to be like, for instance, Velcro uses brand registry correctly when they remove someone who's selling a pair of tennis shoes that has Velcro straps on it, when in reality it's supposed to be hook and loop closure. Like, that's the appropriate use of brand registry under the trademark tab. Just like counterfeit should be, if someone's selling, you know, a Louis Vuitton handbag that it's really not Louis Vuitton, that would be the appropriate use of Project Zero or the counterfeit tab. So it becomes really, it becomes really dicey when people start just using random, you know, infringement forms just because they're trying to remove a hijacker. So it gets it's a little complicated.
Yeah. So,
complicated.
Yeah. So that's interesting. So, I mean, besides, you know, besides doing a test order, is that the only way where, you know, because how are you going to know whether that person is selling something that they've acquired legally, or, you know, if it's something that's, quote unquote, you know, hijacked, or counterfeit item.
Counterfeit.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, even doing the test order is essential. So, like, even with the brands that we represent, we have to do test buys to see if it's actually a real product or not, because it'd be pretty negligent to just go on and assume, well, I don't sell to wholesale, I don't sell to this or that, and just assume that it's a counterfeit product. Like, for instance, Amazon has a program that if you don't have your returns sent back to your warehouse, they can actually sell the returns to a liquidator as an unmanifested return. So somebody could be purchasing your unfulfillable inventory and then just making it semi-fulfillable and sending it back in. Now, that would be materially different. So it's a form of trademark infringement, but it's not counterfeit. So if you just go ahead and assume that they're selling counterfeit products, and then you make that complaint to Amazon and they get kicked off, then now you're the one that's got an issue because you accused them of a crime, because counterfeiting in the United States is a crime. So if you're making a report to Amazon telling them that someone's selling counterfeit products, you're making a legal report that they're committing a crime. That's what makes it considered, you know, libel per se. And it's got really strict penalties if somebody actually sues back. So that's why a test buy is absolutely essential, because, you know, obviously if you get that fake Louis Vuitton bag and you know that it's fake, then sure, go ahead and report a counterfeit. But if you get that, if you buy it and it's, you know, maybe it was a liquidated inventory or something, and it's, you know, and it's a legitimate Louis Vuitton bag, then as unhappy as you would be, you wouldn't want to report it as counterfeit because it's not.
Okay. Interesting. So a couple follow-ups to that. One is, you know, I've read so many, you know, there's so much conflicting information on this. That's why, you know, I'm super excited that you came on so that we can get a lot of clarification on this, including myself. Right. So one of the things that I've, you know, kind of researched is, like, so if somebody's, you know, purchasing your product and then reselling it back on Amazon, technically, doesn't it become a used product then per Amazon's policies? You know, so technically it's no longer a new product that should be listed as a used product. Is that incorrect? Or what's your experience and recommendations for something like that?
Well, I'd say that one depends, because, you know, if you look at so many, what so many Amazon sellers do with the retail arbitrage space, that's exactly what they're doing when they go to TJ Maxx and Ross and they purchase products, or even the Nike store, and they purchase products and then sell them on Amazon. So if they're still in the new packaging and they meet all the criteria of Amazon's condition guidelines, then they are considered new products. The issue where it becomes that maybe it becomes a used product is if they, for instance, you know, it goes back to, like, the material differences, which is a legal concept. Material differences meaning, like, say you create a warranty policy or a quality control policy or a customer service guarantee policy and say that those policies only apply to purchases from your storefront. Well, now when they sell the product, if they're selling it as a new item, they're selling an item that doesn't come with any of those guarantees and return policies and warranties. So now you actually have more of a legal claim to say that, hey, they should have listed this as a used product, because under the new condition guideline, it says it comes with all warranties and manufacturer, you know, guarantees and everything you'd expect of a new product. So that's where you run into an issue and could have, like, that gotcha against a hijacker. But on the same line of thought, you still have to watch out, because reporting them through brand registry at that point is probably not the appropriate way. It'd be more appropriate to report them through seller performance and say that they're selling an item that's not as described, rather than trying to say that they're selling counterfeit, because it's still not counterfeit. And it's still not necessarily, it is trademark infringement, but it's not necessarily trademark infringement of the point that you would go on to brand registry and report it as trademark infringement, because there's different, levels of trademark infringement that they want reported.
Interesting. So all this is really interesting. Where I feel like that's the way that the setup is now, where it fails, I think, is going back to the test order policy. Especially if it's a prime item where Amazon can, literally go and dig that product out of their fulfillment center and visually inspect it like right there. But the other problem is these shipments coming from China, especially, but from, other parts of the world where, they're sending it the slowest way possible. It takes a month, or whatever. And then we've gotten, deliveries for test orders before where instead of our product, they threw like a keychain or something in there because they knew that, we're the brand owner and we're doing a test buy. Any suggestions or any, tips, tricks, how to deal with those types of things?
Those are difficult, but definitely, documentation and sending it into Amazon, letting them know what's going on in that sort of situation. That's when it would become appropriate to report it as, an item that's not meeting the detail page, because Amazon still cares about that.
Right.
And especially if they're sending in, a counterfeit item saying that, because they just recently Amazon clarified their policy to say that now counterfeit can mean it used to be that Amazon required that in order for it to be counterfeit, they would actually, if you were selling, keep going back to Louis Vuitton because it's iconic and everyone knows it. So if you're selling a purse on Amazon and it's just a black purse with nothing special, just a black bag, and you put it under the Louis Vuitton listing, Amazon used to not consider that counterfeit. They just recently changed it so that if you're selling under the Louis Vuitton, brand on Amazon and you sell that black bag with nothing on it, it's just the same as if you'd sold a bag that had the LV on it. Because before they used to consider counterfeit as only being items that are stamped with the word LV or, the brand name as being actually counterfeit. It's kind of a weird distinction that they had. Again, where Amazon differs from federal law because Amazon tries to make up their own rules. So now they're actually saying, hey, if you're, so that example you said of the keychain, you could actually legitimately claim counterfeit because they're selling it as if it's the product, your private label product, but it's really not. And so now it's okay to say, claim counterfeit. It's kind of an interesting distinction.
Yeah, I was going to say, and that also translates directly to private label sellers. If you're getting something from China that, maybe a lot of other people are sourcing the exact same product, but it carries, a stamped trademark, on the product, then technically, in Amazon's eyes, that would kind of be the same situation, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's also a big issue for a lot of people in the private label space, is that you may find, going to your water bottle example, that there's a water bottle that says, water bottle 2.0, and that's a trademark thing. And that's your listing is water bottle 2.0. And then somebody else finds water bottle on that same looking water bottle on Alibaba, and they send it in and put it on your listing. It used to be the case that that was not considered counterfeit in the eyes of Amazon. Now they've revamped with Project Zero, at least, that is considered counterfeit. So you could report it as such. And we're seeing a lot more suspensions for that coming our way because people are selling products that are, they're getting hit with a counterfeit complaint and they don't understand because they went to this, maybe they went to this distributor, or they went to Alibaba, and it's exactly the same product that they listed against. But they don't notice that it says, water bottle 2.0 by water bottle 2019 or whatever is
right, deemed, right.
And that's,
right.
So it's kind of an interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. That also makes it extremely hard, like you said, for sellers to know what to report. I think that's, like you said earlier, that's where they're going to have problems with that Amazon Zero program, because it's going to be extremely hard for them to prove, the seller's intent. Because if the seller goes, I know that this person's not carrying, they're selling the same thing, but it's not carrying my brand. How are you going to know unless you do it, once again, do a test order. And, that's where that program starts to fall apart, is because there's so many, it's so ambiguous on what's considered, I forget the terminology, but where you can, almost like fair use, like resell something. And then the other, the other way of, somebody, might have the exact same water bottle, like you said, but it doesn't carry the branding. So that's where there's a big minefield there.
Exactly. No, it's a huge risk for sellers, and it's an even bigger risk, I think, for brands as it going forward as people try to figure out what's actually going on here.
Yeah.
Because nobody knows the answer to that.
Interesting. So we have a couple of questions. That's what's cool about this format. The way we do this here is we let the live audience ask questions as we go, which makes it a little more fun than just you and I talking at each other. One of the questions is, can a person open more than one professional account with one LLC or multiple LLCs? I know the answer to that, but Jeff, you'll probably have a better one than I do.
So legally, not with the same LLC. With Amazon's permission, you can open up more than one seller account, but they require that each seller account have a different LLC, a different business bank account associated with it, and a different tax ID. Really, Amazon, when they're having these sort of scenarios with multiple seller accounts, times that they will grant permission for you to have more than one is if you're selling categories that are they don't work well with one another. So, for instance, if you are selling, we have a client that was selling live insects and then also one of their, and then they were trying to start going into private label baby products. Well, the Bug Factory selling baby products, not really going to work too well. So they went to Amazon and asked for permission and Seller Performance granted it. So now they've got a baby products account and they've got a live insect account. Because obviously cockroaches and pacifiers, moms want to find.
Right. I think that wouldn't work too well, but I think it would be even worse if it was like adult toys and baby products.
I think that'd be even worse. Is now in that that category as well. So if you've got a third seller account.
Oh man, they're diversifying. I like it. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. So, okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So Amazon will grant it, but the key thing to keep in mind is that they do link them all together. So if you have, say you start selling counterfeit, baby products under your baby products account, they're going to take down every single one of your accounts and withhold the funds and inventory until you fix the problem. So it's not like they're, it does diversify, but it doesn't protect you against Amazon if they suspend you because they're all linked. Might not be immediate, but it will happen within usually 24 to 48 hours. The first suspension. Other things to think about, there are people out there that do have self accounts. Obviously that's against Amazon's policies. And so you're taking a risk if you do it. And so you just have to really know what you're doing if you're going to do that, because it's such a risky territory to go into to do that.
Right. And another thing to mention too, guys, is if you are going to do that, you have to contact Amazon first and ask for permission. I mean, you want to get all your ducks in a row first, and then before you try to set up that new account and even, start plugging in your data in that new account, you want to make sure that you email, I believe it's Seller Performance, right, Jeff, to get that permission?
Correct. It is Seller Performance, so you're going to ask them for, they'll give you a whole list of questions that you have to provide information on to prove that it's a different business and have everything set up separately. And it's really more complicated than doing it yourself because, Amazon's not going to let you have multiple accounts unless you have multiple LLCs. Well, with multiple LLCs, if you don't structure correctly, that means multiple tax returns. So now all of a sudden you're filing all these different tax returns, both on the sales tax front and the income tax front. So you really want to seek professional counsel for getting that set up because, it'd be much better to file one master return, for instance, and have them all structured where it's a consolidated corporate reporting group than to have it be, just DIY because LegalZoom is super cheap, because it'll save you money on the front end to go to LegalZoom, but you're going to spend a ton of money on the back end when it comes April 15th or March 15th and you're filing that all those tax returns.
Yeah, it's interesting. What about if you have, different partners for each business?
Well, that's different then, because then you probably don't have a consolidated entity group and you would want to have, separate tax returns for each business because, the worst thing that could happen is that you have one business that's profitable and one that's not, and then your partners don't know who deserves what. So
Right. Definitely
if you've got multiple partners, for different businesses, think about getting that. And that's even more reason to have an attorney set everything up, because sometimes partnerships don't work and you don't want to find that out. You don't want to find out what your partners are like when you're divorcing them.
Right.
Basically.
Yep. Yep. Totally get that. Cool.
Thanks for tuning in to part one of this episode. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time for live Q&A and bonus content after the recording at sellerroundtable.com. sponsored by the ultimate software tool for Amazon sales and growth, SellerSEO.com, and AmazingAtHome.com.